My name's Sean Collier. I'm joined once again by Amy Whipple.
Hello, Sean.
Welcome back. When was your last? It's been a while.
I think it's been since If I Stay, I think.
Oh, my God, that thing. Yeah. But we're here sitting by the Monongahela River because water and fish and creatures and life in the ocean and feelings.
Sean, if there's an octopus in this podcast, I am gone. It's over.
This week, we'll talk about Finding Dory, octopuses and Sigourney Weaver and everything on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, June the 17th, 2016. I remain Sean Collier. Aaron Kleiber finally took a vacation with his family. That's an actual vacation and not just he's doing comedy somewhere and his family comes along. So, good for him.
What's a vacation?
Yeah.
I don't know what that word is.
Those are the things where I fly across the country for wrestling shows. That's what those are.
Oh, dear. I'm judging you a little bit.
Well, the last time I also went to Disney World, so that counts. If you're at Disney World, you're on a vacation. Do you think there are people who live in Orlando who just, like, have passes and just, like, go on the weekend?
There must be, right? And there was that, they recently replayed that, this American Life bit about how the girl's mom wouldn't let her go, but they would go to the hotel as their vacation that was, like, down the street.
Oh, right.
Was it Starley Kline?
I think that was. I think I heard a tease, but not the thing. That is horrible, though.
It is.
Like, I mean, Disney is magical. That's what we're here to talk about.
Obviously.
There has been a 20-year turnaround where in the relatively recent past, it was like, oh, Disney is evil. Like, in the 90s, do you remember, like, in the late 90s where someone said, hey, start paying attention to the subtext of Disney movies and how Beauty and the Beast is basically an apology for abusive relationships and Aladdin is wildly anti-Arab.
Yes.
And like, that was a thing. And
it still is on Tumblr.
And definitely still is on Tumblr and Reddit all the time. And it was also like, oh, Disney, they're just taking everyone's money. They're evil. But then it's been like 15 years of Disney became the place that, like, forwards socially conscious messages all of a sudden.
It really does, though. And then that's how we wind up crying by a river.
Right. Many adults, more adults than children, I'd say. I think that, like, you were here when we talked about Frozen years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, like, the messages of Frozen, the very positive messages of Frozen, land with children and have an impact on them. But I think children walk out of Frozen going, the snowman's nose was funny, and their parents are crying.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what they do now.
And it's heart-wrenching, because now I cannot show this to my small person for, like, another 85 years, because I can't handle it.
He'll be fine. Definitely can't.
No, he can watch it with other people. I will just ugly cry.
Let's get to the emotions, because this hits particularly on Pixar, but on other Disney movies too. It certainly was. I was sobbing during Frozen, certainly, and even The Good Dinosaur a little bit. And that has become like an automatic thing with Disney and Pixar movies. Is they just can't not be heartbreaking.
Oh, I knew going in. I was like, well, we're going to go see a Pixar movie, so I will cry. It's just a matter of how much am I crying.
I'm not just trying to start trouble. Is there a way that, like, you feel manipulated at all with these? Is there a way that it's like, you know, is there any part of Disney and Pixar where you think they just know that adults will love it more and thus buy more toys for their children if they cried?
You know, I never ever get past the emotions enough to even think about that. And there was a point where I was like, oh, if this were real people, I'd be crying even harder. Like, if this were some, like, if this were a tail, not a fish.
Right.
And there were actually, like, human faces attached to it, I would have been on the floor and you would have just had to roll me out. So the fact that it was a fish maybe was less manipulating. Or manipulative. I don't know. Do you feel manipulated?
I mean, no. Hey, everyone, Finding Dory is good. We can skip to that. But I only feel manipulated in that it's so automatic. Like, there are some sometimes, like, you know, Zootopia certainly had a lot of socially conscious things to say, but there wasn't really a crying moment. And, like, you know, Big Hero 6 didn't really, well, no, it did. But...
I've seen those GIFs on Tumblr. I know what's happening.
Right. It just feels like, oh, they've figured out ways to make everyone get emotional, and they're going to do it every time.
I think it's because they do it well. Because a Lifetime movie can make me cry every time, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definite manipulation. And you see it coming, and you know it's happening, and you're like, this is garbage, but I'm crying anyway. Whereas with Pixar, they're always telling a good story with it, so then I'm following the good story, and then I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah. Well, before, let's back up, because I'm going to make you just dive right back into those feelings so hard in a minute. But
fair.
I always really loved Finding Nemo. A lot of people, the early, like, pre-WALL-E Pixar movie that they attached to is The Incredibles, which I like, but Finding Nemo was the one that really hit me, because I remember being like 17 or 18 and working at the movie theater, having not seen it beginning to end yet, and walking into the movie during the scene where Dory is hatching a crazy scheme and Marlin instinctively yells, "You think you can do these things, but you can't, Nemo," at Dory, and just has, like, that incredible revelation of how he's, you know, limiting those around him and projecting his stress onto other people. And like, that was the moment where I was like, oh, shit, these movies say things.
Yep.
And I do think that Finding Nemo was legitimately a very, very good movie. So I was super pumped for this. Where were you coming in on these colorful fish?
Well, okay, so I'm contractually obligated to love Ellen.
Right.
That's just part. She's our leader.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it took me a really long time, relatively, to see Finding Nemo. I guess I must have been in college then, maybe, and I did not see it in the theater. And then I cried a lot, and I was like, well, I can't see that again.
Mm-hmm.
But what was it in the lineup? Like, in terms of, so Toy Story was first, but then, like, where in the lineup does Finding Nemo fall?
I'm going to get it wrong. I want to say Toy Story, then A Bug's Life, then...
Oh, yeah, I like that one, too.
Then something. I mean, Finding Nemo might have been after that, or maybe The Incredibles was in there. It was before WALL-E. It was before Up. It was after Toy Story 2. So it's, like, third or fourth.
Because I want to say it was in that gulf where, like, it's not that I was too cool for it, because I've never been too cool for anything.
Right.
But it just wasn't, like, if I was away at school, so I wasn't seeing it, like, with my family or something, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the predetermined attachment that I had going in to see Toy Story 2.
Right.
But so I was excited, and when you offered the chance to see it, I was like, hell yeah. You know, like, no hesitation.
Well, I mean, the only reservation is that there have certainly been not great Pixar sequels. Like none of the Cars movies are very good, but the sequels are particularly not that good. Monsters University is fine at best. So, like, I think there was a chance that this one was not going to have that punch, was just going to be like, hey, remember these guys? It's not that. I think that, like, I think there are better Pixar movies, but no, it's a new story that has its own thing to say that's pretty separate from what the original said. Yeah?
Yeah, and there were moments where I was like, please don't give us the same.
Right.
Because it's very easy to give the same movie and to make me still enjoy it a second time.
Right.
But all the better if it's the new story.
Well, it gets that out of the way. Like, it's like, you know, in like the 10th minute, it's like, hey, here are these surfer turtles. Remember them? Okay, now let's move on to new wacky characters.
I did like the surfer turtles.
Like, I'm not going to spoil the wacky characters, but there are two wacky characters that are so good that, like, I'm waiting to see every time. And
I do like the wacky characters.
And I hope that when Disney sends me the deluxe Blu-ray, that there are bonus shorts featuring those two wacky characters.
Oh my God, do we get to talk about the short that was at the beginning?
Oh yeah, no, we're skipping. So with most Pixar movies, and now increasingly with most Disney animated movies, there's a short film at the beginning. This is called Piper, and it's about a child sandpiper learning to fend for itself, and I came closest to crying on that.
I did too. So when it sent us in to Finding Dory proper, I was already on the edge.
Oh my! It was like you know, you had been punched in the face really hard before a night of drinking. Like, like I'm already not stable. But it was great. It had a completely different animation style. Mm-hmm. I did feel like this is a whole night of sea creatures. But
that's fine.
But yeah, no. There is a lovely short beforehand that, you know, once again will be the front runner for the best animated short Oscar. It'll be the one when it gets to that category at the Oscars. You go, oh wait, I saw one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
and it sets you up for crying, so it's fine.
Right. Right. They're doing Which one was it? Which one? There was one that had a short called Lava. Is that one that I saw with you that was about a singing island?
No. I don't remember that one.
That was before something I saw with Eric Leslie. God, and I can't remember which one of these it was.
Wait, is that the one where it's based off of, like, actual Hawaiian mythology, but then the internet thought it was being racist until somebody else on the internet was like, no, there's actual mythology, idiot, and this is, like, good on them?
That sounds like both this and the internet.
Okay, good.
It was just like a luau-style song about a lonely volcano looking for someone to love.
Yes, that's the one.
Okay.
That's what? The one. What? The internet got real sad, and then it was like showdown time.
The internet, man. Like,
stay off of Tumblr.
I super don't want to go reactionary in the other direction with, like, internet outrages, but, like, do you sometimes feel that, like, the internet is just going to get pissed off about everything, and then we're going to have 2 weeks of debating whether or not it's worth getting pissed off about, and then we'll move on?
Oh, absolutely.
With everything.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's like being in, like, freshman year intro to women's studies all over again.
But it, like, this, okay, here's what got me mad, is before I watched this season of Kimmy Schmidt, which is pretty good, not quite as good as the first one, but pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it.
There was this controversy because there's an episode about how the internet rushes to judgment.
Yes, and it was so delightfully done.
It was done perfectly, where Titus has a character. Titus has a one-man show where he's playing the geisha woman that he believes he was in a past life, and like a posse of the internet shows up to protest it, and then watches it, and they're moved, and everything's okay. And like, before I saw this, I was reading stories on the internet about how it was so offensive to opinions that
the internet's gonna eat itself.
That Kimmy Schmidt was like criticizing people being pissed off.
Yes.
And it's like, just no. Like, you're in a feedback loop of outrage at a certain point.
It totally did, though.
Like, you get mad about something, and then if someone comments on the fact that you're mad because they commented on the fact that you're mad, and
because you're being invalidated and your opinions are valid, Sean.
And like, generally I'm super in favor of, no, let's think about things critically and talk about them, but it's just so automatic. Like, can we, like, this is why we can't have nice things, because no one can do anything without people being pissed off about it.
It's true, but most of the time the people who are pissed off like that have not thought critically, and that is why they've jumped to conclusions. Not that I've had any feelings or thoughts about this matter at all.
No, I'm sure you haven't.
Being someone who spends an inordinate amount of time on Tumblr and enjoying things like Kimmy Schmidt. So.
It's just like my, the main, this is so condescending and exactly what pisses people off. But like my main reaction when I see those controversies is like, yeah, be older than you are and then it'll be fine.
I know.
Right?
When did we get old? Because I have definitely reached that point
mm-hmm.
where I'm like, these kids today.
Right?
They can't enjoy anything. Get some perspective.
No, it's like, good for you for like trying to read texts and figure out what is problematic and like what is worth being concerned about and the way that media represents. It's so good that you're thinking of all of those things. But once you're not 20 years old, you'll learn the difference between the battles that are worth fighting and the battles that aren't.
Correct.
And like, people think, no, there's absolutes. But it's like, okay, when you have a show like Kimmy Schmidt, which is one of the only TV shows anyone can name with zero straight white male leads...
Yeah.
Then, like, yeah, you do give them a pass on having a Asian character named Dong. Like,
which is lazy as hell.
It's lazy, but it's also, like, one, that's a real name, and two, the word Dong is funny.
It is
like,
every time.
Like, so...
It is every time, though.
Like, you gotta put these things on a scale and say, like, yeah, there probably are worse things happening on Two Broke Girls. Let's complain about Two Broke Girls. Oh, wait, we're not watching it, so we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know if horrible things are happening on Two Broke Girls.
I don't know. Sometimes I have not seen it since How I Met Your Mother went off the air. But I do know that I felt questionable about Garrett Morris's character.
In my limited experience, I felt the same way. But that's the thing. It's like, there's way worse stuff being seen by way more people that is way more worth your keystrokes.
It's true, though.
People don't say keystrokes anymore.
No, they really don't.
That's an old person internet word.
Is it like thumb taps now?
It's
thumb swipes?
Swipes. Just everything. The world is about swipes.
We swipe.
Okay, here's where your feelings are coming back.
All right, here we go.
So, Finding Dory didn't hit me as hard as some children's feelings movies have hit me. Maybe because my medication is working.
It happens to the best of us.
But maybe because it doesn't speak to me personally. And without spoiling anything, it's basically a movie about believing in your children. Like, believe in your children and they will validate your belief in them.
Yes, and did you catch the dedication at the end? That does not spoil anything.
No.
Oh, it's dedicated to families of all kinds.
Oh, shit.
I lost my shit all over again.
So...
I might right now.
So, you know, carefully and taking as much time as you need.
Mm-hmm.
How does that message about... Yeah, how does that hit you in your life, which is different from mine?
So, if the message of the movie is about... So, twofold, right? You've got the idea of family, what you make of it.
Yeah.
Right, and being like adoptive families, finding home, finding where you come from. And then you also have Dory, who is representative in the movie, which I didn't think they were going to address until you see a scene of the parents where you're like, oh, Dory's special needs.
Yes.
And then as the soon-to-be adoptive mother of a special needs boy... I will tell you that I wiped my eyes with my skirt because my shirt is white and I had no napkins, and then I got popcorn juice in my eye.
Yes.
It's what happened.
So I was thinking that about you as the movie was going on. I was thinking, oh my God, I took her to a movie about how you have to believe in your special needs children and that belief will be paid off in love and devotion. I'm sorry.
Like, I already texted my sisters to tell them I'm broken.
Right.
And that they can't see it.
But how, I mean, no one is more primed for this movie than you. How did, aside from the crying, intellectually, how was that handled?
I loved it. And I'm sure there are social justice warriors somewhere who will tell me I'm wrong. But, so, like, we talk about this, so I attend a lot of support groups, apparently. But there's one for foster parents, and then there's one for special needs kids. And a lot of it is just the sheer blind belief you have to have in both sets of kids, just that they're going to make it through. Because they've either seen a ton or they've been through a ton, and you just have to love them through it, and they're going to make it, and they'll be okay. And if you let go of that, the whole thing crumbles, right? Mm-hmm. So even when it's absolutely ridiculous, you have to just keep going with it, which in the flashes to Dory's parents, that's what you see, is that they were supplying her with all of those tools to make it in the world as she is, not as anybody else. Like, she's not being asked to be somebody different. They're trying to make her to be the most successful Dory she can be, which I think is where it really makes it as an idea. Instead of, like, special needs kids can do whatever, you know, like, they can be anything, which they can, but within, like, just like any other kid, like, who that kid is as a person, what's the best way to make them their best self?
Because Marlin, Albert Brooks the fish, like, more, I mean, you know, he's a comedic treasure, but in this, he's less a character and more Albert Brooks the fish.
Yes.
Is, you know, he's someone who tries to, like, alternately make, because Nemo has a disability as well with he's got a bad fin, and Marlin alternately tries to either hide people with different challenges from the world or just make them be as normal as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is basically about, no, you know, give people in this situation the tools for their situation.
Exactly. And, like, I don't know if... So, Wee Dude is his internet name. Like, I don't know at this point if he's going to get to live on his own someday, if he'll have that skill set. But I'd like to think that he could, even if it's in, like, the most Dory way. He'll be in the most Wee Dude way. And he'll find his people. And he's got me, and he's got his bio mom, and we've got this system of things happening, which is what the movie also, like, that there are systems of people out there who can help you.
This, you know, in an era, this is not about the movie, I'm just curious, in an era where a lot of things tied to both the government and healthcare are not working great, has it been your experience that, you know, the support system for someone in a position like yours and in a position like your son's are things set up well for him to succeed right now?
I hope so. And we have found, like, you guys, Pittsburgh is full of crazy resources that you would never, ever, ever think of. Like, I learned recently, Sandcastle has water wheelchairs. And open, accessible areas. So, like, when he's bigger, if he can't walk yet, can put him in a water wheelchair. Like, right now, he's small enough I can carry him. But he still can have that experience. And he can play baseball when he turns 5, which he will, unless he super protests.
Oh, at the Pirates have all the Miracle League fields.
Oh, my God. It's an amazing place.
Yeah?
Yes. And the playground attached to it. Like, there's just so much in this city. And as soon as you tap into it,
mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a whole other world.
That's very encouraging.
Really, really is, though.
Yeah.
Because you really, like, I had no idea the extent of it until getting to know, like, other parents and stuff who have been at this longer. And they're just like, oh, here's all the resources. And I'm like, oh, my God.
I'm surprised you can carry him anywhere because he is 2 and he is, like, half of you.
He is.
He's 30, a giant.
He's 30 pounds and 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I am not much different. He's literally half of my grandmother.
Yeah.
Like, but now I'm super butch, so.
Right. Lugging a kid around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we change the subject slightly, which we will not too much, hey, let's get to another internet controversy.
Oh, so boy.
I don't know if you remember this, but a big part of the story about this movie like a year ago was that people were mad because it most of it takes place at a about the ocean like theme park.
Ah, yes.
Like not quite a SeaWorld, but it's more like a forward thinking zoo, but the size of a SeaWorld. Lots of exhibits and two of the main characters are big sea creatures who live in a theme park. And people were really unhappy about that because it was coming off of everything with Blackfish and, you know, finally getting SeaWorld to straighten up and fly right after all these years. And I think that they responded to it, and I think I felt this happening during the thing. So there's this running joke about Sigourney Weaver.
It's fantastic.
Where Sigourney Weaver is the like automated voice of the theme park, and Dory keeps talking to Sigourney Weaver because she thinks that Sigourney Weaver is her friend who's going to help her, and it's great.
But it pays off every time.
No, it's funny every time it happens. But so they had like carte blanche to like insert voiceover.
Yeah.
And I think that I even like felt this happening on the sound, heard this happening on the soundtrack, that they went back into the studio and said, hey, we're re-editing just dialogue and mostly Sigourney Weaver's lines so that this is a place that only releases its creatures back into the wild.
Oh.
And some of that was there in the beginning because that's like, that's the fact that, The fish and the creatures in the park are ill is part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like they were really hammering home, yeah, this is not a place where creatures go and live their entire lives. This is an aquatic animal rehab. Do you think that that was, let's not give people any more reason to be pissed off and address this?
Maybe. I will be honest that is usually not on my radar of things.
Which thing?
Any sort of animal rights or environment. Like, that's one of those things that, like, in theory, I'm like, yes, we need to do all the good things.
Right.
But when I see them, I don't necessarily notice them.
Well, you're one of those. I also am enthusiastic about those things. But you're one of those reasonable people that's like, I have human problems to be outraged about.
Well,
I only have so much time in the day for outrage.
It's true. And there are some people who are very into it, that are taking care of it, and
right.
I will support them probably monetarily.
Right, right. But yeah, I think, you know, there were some conspicuous moments where I was like, there was one where completely unrelated to the action that was happening on screen, the Sigourney Weaver voice came in and just said again, we release all of our animals. Like, that had nothing to do with the action of the scene. And it's like, huh? Did you hear? We're serious this time.
I was thinking more that the internet would be outraged about one of the sea lions.
Oh, he just had a unibrow. Yeah, that's got to be a corner of Tumblr.
The like, internet will find a way.
People who are trying to make sure that those with unibrows are not cast as weird.
Yes.
Well,
it's going to be a thing.
It's probably going to be a thing.
I'll let you know. I'll search Tumblr probably tomorrow.
We're going to take a break, but we'll rate it at the end. But yeah, this is very good. And yes, this does fall into see it whether or not you have a child to see it with.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk more about kids' movies. Briefly, I want to remind you about our sponsor, goodsandevil.com. They make awesome shirts. Aaron is always the one to plug them relentlessly, but I can tell you myself as well, I have so many t-shirts. I probably have 100 t-shirts, and 50 of them are like, yeah, I can't wear that in public anymore because I'm a grown-up. That's not the case with Goods and Evil t-shirts. These are the t-shirts where people at a bar will stop you and talk to you about your shirt and ask you where you got it, probably a little bit more than you want to, but don't let that stop you either, because you want to be that cool guy who has the cool shirt that's, yeah, everyone has that. If you're in Pittsburgh, everyone has those cool Yinzer Saying shirts. You're better. You have a cool Evil Dead shirt, or a cool Friday the 13th shirt, a cool vegan shirt. And even if you do want the Pittsburgh shirts, they have better ones at goodsandevil.com. Use our offer code HANDLE. That's the middle word in You Can't Handle the Truth. And you will get a discount on your order. That is the offer code HANDLE at goodsandevil.com. And we will be right back after this message from the Epicast Network.
Boom! I'm Aaron Kleiber. Guys, check out my podcast, Grown Dad Business, part of the Epicast Network. I talk to guests, some comedians, actors, some pretty fun, interesting people about their kids, about their childhood, about parents. And every once in a while, I bring in my own kids. Like my son Luke. Should they listen to the podcast? Why?
But we love you, right?
Oh, okay. Or my daughter Becca talks to us. Why should they listen to the podcast?
Because my dad is funny.
True.
He is a good spy.
He's a good spy?
Yes.
Not anymore. You just told everybody.
And he's awesome.
Luke, am
Yay,
I awesome?
Poops.
I do poop. Listen to Grown Dad Business, guys, part of the Epicast Network, and you'll get more of this and hopefully more entertaining things that is not happening. Follow your heart.
And we're back. Amy, what do you have to plug?
Oh, God, I don't Nothing? Know if I have anything to plug right now.
Being a mom.
Being a mom. Hanging out on Tumblr after he goes to bed.
What's your Tumblr?
Amy Whipple.
Okay.
It's mostly garbage, but it's fun garbage.
And your Twitter is...
It's Amy Whipple.
But that is mostly just things seeded from your Tumblr.
Oh, I changed that.
Oh, okay.
Because it was letting people know just how much time I was spending on Tumblr and in what concentrated blocks.
Oh, okay.
So I decided to not let people know that.
Like,
anymore.
Huh, she's on Tumblr a lot between at working hours on business days. Wait a minute.
Huh.
Hmm. What does that mean? But...
So now I just tweet instead.
Right. But this is a while ago now, but since you were talking about WeDude, tell people where they can find your piece for The Guardian about him, because that was great.
Oh, thanks. I have
Oh, there's a car starting. Okay.
There is a car starting.
And there's a helicopter overhead.
Hi, helicopter.
Did you notice, you're not much of a sports person.
Not terrifically, no.
Did you notice
when the
Penguins won the cup, hey everyone, the Penguins won the Stanley Cup. It was great. But did you notice that immediately the sky was covered in news helicopters?
No, my neighborhood was silent, and I did not know they even won until my boss texted me.
No, I was downtown, and that literally there were 12 or 15 like news helicopters in the sky to get aerial coverage of like chaos. But I saw some of the footage on the TV, and it was mostly just like, here's four people walking down the street. They were probably watching the game at a bar, and they're going home. Like, there was no trouble. It was...
No, because everybody used their trouble points on Thursday.
Right. Oh, that would have been anarchy. Like, if you're not from here, so the Penguins had the chance to win the Stanley Cup at home on last Thursday, two Thursdays ago, as you're hearing this, and that, like, there were police in riot gear all over town, because it was clear that if this happened at home, people were just going to tear shit down immediately. And that didn't happen, and that deflated enough that so on Sunday, when they did win it on the road, it was just like, yay, we're going to honk our horns and take pictures.
And we all have to go to work tomorrow.
Right. It worked. It probably worked out better for the city.
It really probably did. All the bus stops are still standing.
I was in attendance at the game on Thursday, because my brother is a huge fan, And I'm a fan too. He's a diehard, and he said immediately, if there's a chance they're going to win the cup at home, I have to be there. So we got in, and it was a stupid amount of money, but I'll tell you, it was $275 for a ticket.
That's not right? as much as I thought you were going to say.
That's the thing. Like, walking in, I was like, man, if they lose when I spent this much. And then I sat down, and there was a chatty guy behind me who struck up a conversation and was like, how'd you get your tickets? And I was like, oh, we knew somebody, so they were just a little bit over face value. It wasn't too bad. And like, when we said that, his heart sunk.
Oh, poor guy.
And it was like, oh, do you know what I spent? What? I mean, for this one seat, I paid $1,500. And it's like,
that's
oh
like
my God.
Hamilton prices.
I feel fine now. I feel like I got this at Goodwill.
Oh,
like,
God.
And you could tell, like, the feeling that moved throughout the building was not, oh, they're losing. It was, I spent how much?
That is
and
terrible.
They lost. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot of rent checks that are late around the city of Pittsburgh this month.
Sorry, landlords.
What are we talking about? Oh, where can people find your Guardian article? That was the point.
I linked them on amywhipple.com. There was one, was that a year ago?
Uh-huh.
About becoming a foster parent. And then one, apropos of this movie on Mother's Day, about the tribe.
Okay.
And since Finding Dory is largely about the tribe.
Mm-hmm. Go to amywhipple.com for those and other things.
Yes, including things that I write for you.
Right, of course, for Pittsburgh Magazine.
Yay, Pittsburgh Magazine!
And what do I have to say? Oh, if you're listening to this Friday, tomorrow night, Saturday, if you happen to be in the Johnstown area, I don't know how big our reach is in Johnstown, but if you're there, I'll be performing at the Crow's Nest. I've been there before. That's a great bar overlooking Johnstown. Happy to be back there. And next Friday, a week from today, is the DVE Comedy Festival. They've got a great main stage lineup at the Byam Theater. And then I am hosting the Loaded Show stage at Club Cafe at 11:30. And we have a killer lineup, as always, of locals. Aaron Kleiber will be there. Danny Palumbo, Andy Picaro, Matt Light, Ray Zawadny, Molly Shero, all on that show. And the big thing, that's the second stage. So that is the stage where some of the headliners, the touring guys, the heavyweights will pop over and can, you know, do a drop-in set. Last year, Amy, Michael Che just shows up and does a set.
As one does.
And he was great. And he, like, there was, like, a wasted woman in the front row having a conversation with him, and he dealt with it beautifully.
Oh, there was some, like, awkwardness about that at Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
As soon as one person talks, everybody thinks they can talk.
Yes, I'm aware of this phenomena.
Ugh.
It's... And the highlight of that, of last year's for me, was... there's someone I won't call out by name, and I won't even allude to who she is, because, she, like, there I have friends who know her. But she basically was really drunk and knew who I was.
Oh, boy.
And thought this was an opportunity to be like, hey... Put me on the cover of your magazine.
Oh, Christmas.
Because I'm awesome and I'm going to be such a big deal.
Oh, God.
And she like, I got this relentlessly for like 2 hours. That by the end, she was like, you're a dick. You know, you are just a dick. And this like builds.
Stop it.
This builds and builds until Michael Che walked in, and then she just zooms to him like a magnet. Like, as long as I was the most prominent person in that room, I was going to get abuse, and then she switched to, you know, I could be on SNL. Like
oh,
that.
God.
So don't do that anywhere, no matter who you are.
Please don't.
Really, this is a little bit of a magazine editor complaining. Like, if you have to ask someone to write things about you, you probably don't deserve to have them written about you. Like, I'm not invalidating the whole field of PR. If you work for an awesome place, you send press releases to the places that might write about you. If you're an individual that is trying to convince me to write a thing about you, probably not.
For longer than 20 seconds.
Right. If you come up to me and be like, hey, I won a gold medal. Oh, okay, yeah, let's do a thing. Other than that... Like, no, I'm big on the internet. Not big enough. I'm sorry.
Everybody's big on... I'm big enough on the internet now.
You are.
And I have, like, no people on the internet.
You did a podcast with that guy who's, like, the guy.
It's true. A lot of years ago.
Todd Vanderwerf.
Yes.
Who went from the AV Club to...
Vox.
To Vox. And he's a huge deal. And Amy did a podcast about parenthood with him.
I did, which is now in syndication, and it's made my life on the same network that shows Gilmore Girls.
You don't even need a remote anymore.
I don't. I haven't changed from that station in like 3 weeks.
We're already going long. I'm sorry. But here's what I have for extra butter. So I don't have any children and no immediate plans. You have a child, though, mm-hmm. and I am a person who thinks about these things.
Yes.
And of all the conversations we've had, both you and I and Aaron and I, about movies and kids, this is a question I haven't asked. So when your child is old enough to appreciate movies, what comes first? What are the things that you want to say, okay, here's what movies are? That you also think are okay for someone 3-4 years old?
Oh, well, I already showed him A League of Their Own.
Okay.
So I had to get important things out of the way.
That's not where I might have started, but okay. But he's...
Feminism!
But he's two, so he's not really following. He's not like, oh, so Madonna represents... Like, no.
No, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. So when I was probably not quite as old as he was... The Jungle Book was re-released in the theater, and that's my dad's favorite Disney movie. So that's how I got to see my first theater movie.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast is my favorite of the, what I would now consider classic Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mandatory that he sees that.
So you're not a social justice warrior about that one?
No, you know what? I have a lot of thoughts and feelings for those social justice warriors about Beauty and the Beast, because the whole thing is that Belle is a bitch, too.
Really?
And they both have to learn how to love. It is not just the Beast. She's got to figure out her shit, too.
There's a movie, and I forget the name about it, but there's a documentary, the name of it. There's a documentary about... Are the messages in that generation of Disney movies harmful? And, like, the moment that got me was they showed Beauty and the Beast to a bunch of kids,
mm-hmm.
and talked about how does this teach young girls to stay in abusive, controlling relationships? And they asked these children who had just watched it, what do you think the movie's about? And one little girl said, I think it's about how if someone's really mean to you, you still just have to be nice to them and then they'll change.
Which is what they teach kids anyway. That is the abiding message of childhood. And that movie is no different. And it came out when I was 7 and I saw it in the theater. And you know what my takeaway was?
Hmm.
I wish somebody would give me a library. That is
That's
now,
true.
So this is
she
my,
is a strong icon.
My bar of love is who's going to give me a goddamn library. That's what they did to me. They destroyed me in that regard. But no, the whole point of childhood is that they don't even call kids like other kids kids now. Everybody's a friend. And you have to treat them as such. So that whole argument, I cannot even, because that is already what we beat into children's heads.
The music's good.
music's fantastic.
Animation is lovely.
It is.
It was nominated for Best Picture.
It was. Was it the first animated one to be nominated?
I don't know if it's the very first. I think that depends on what happened with Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. I think Snow White and the Seven Dwarves got an honorary Oscar. I think you're correct.
Anyway, so he's going to see Beauty and the Beast. And we already talked about feminism and how patriarchy hurts men, too. So
mm-hmm.
he's going to be well set up.
Right. So Beauty and the Beast and what was the first one that you said? The Jungle Book.
He'll see The Jungle Book. And we have already talked about colonialism. That's already a discussion we have, too.
With your 2-year-old.
With my 2-year-old. You know why, Sean?
Because
you get it out of the way, all the awkward conversations out of the way now. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to talk to him about race, and I cannot get a coherent sentence out about it. But if I work on it now, by the time he's old enough to get it, I will maybe be more intelligible.
Okay. Good luck.
Plus, I went to grad school, and we just talk about those things on the regular.
Right.
And it has poisoned my brain. Mm-hmm. And so when we see things on TV, I go, hey, buddy, that's colonialism.
Oh, he's going to be great in, like, grades K through 4. Where people
teachers are going to hate him.
People are just trying to play, and he's going to drop, well, actually.
He totally is, though.
Oh, my God.
I will buy a lot of liquor for his teachers. I don't know.
The only kid in elementary school who was arguably more nerdy than me was the one who, I remember talking about the ACLU in third grade. Like, I have that distinct memory. And this was a great moment because it was like, it was one of those conversations where, and I was a super nerdy, like, kid who thought about things way too seriously, but I didn't have anything on this kid because it was like one of those conversations in elementary school that's like, if you could make any law that would change the country, what would it be? Mm-hmm. And I swear my answer at like 8 was I would remove the right of free speech for hate groups.
Whoa.
Yes. And nice. This other kid like shot his hand up and is like, well, the ACLU would be all over him immediately. That's a slippery slope. And it's like, we're 8. How does the other kids are like Power Rangers though. And anyway, give one more, the Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast. And,
oh, gosh, I love all the, like, seriously, I have all the Disney movies is really what happens.
I was just in your apartment. You already have them.
I do. So he has to do Toy Story. He has to do Beauty and the Beast. My sister will make him see Cinderella, and then I'll show him the Leslie Ann Warren Cinderella, and we'll talk about how the dress was so heavy that she hurt herself. And there's just, there's so, I cannot even, this is like TV. This is why I have to start now when he's 2. There's not enough time.
Yeah. To indoctrinate your child to the things you love.
Can we talk about how I said I did a screenshot of that on Tumblr and the men's rights activist picked it up?
What? What did you screenshot?
A conversation between me and a friend about how he was going to be my kid was going to be the best feminist. And he was like, oh yeah, we got to brainwash him now. And then the men's rights activists picked it up.
God.
And they were like, see, this is what happens. If you have to brainwash, then it's not actually a valid way of living. And they like totally went with it. I was like, get out of town.
You're not helping. Whenever you say things, you're not helping, you're gentlemen.
You're not helping at all.
Oh, my. Well, I see, I wrestle with this because, like, the thing that I think I would have to start with is The Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
Because it's, you know, the quality is without question. And it's
so long, though.
It's pretty long.
That and Mary Poppins are way longer than you think they are.
But I mean, it's just like, look, this is what movies are. Right? Like, mm-hmm. This is everything that movies can be in one movie.
Yes.
But I wrestle with that because I also know that at that age, like, I was traumatized by The Wicked Witch.
My sister was, too. I was not afflicted, but she would, like, hide behind the couch. But she was also the one who wanted to watch it because of the ruby slippers. She was already torn between fear and fashion.
I always wanted to watch it because that was I think this still happens. That was in the era where somewhere time over the summer there was a big event showing of The Wizard of Oz on network TV every year, which I think is still a thing. And every year I would want to watch it, but like my parents would have to warn me, like you can't come crying in the middle of the night because you're scared of the Wicked Witch. And does that, like, are you worried about that at all? Like, are you worried about scenes where the beast is angry or the snake in Jungle Book and then there's nightmares?
You know, I think it all depends. He so far seems like a pretty resilient kid. And what terrifies, like, it's all totally different. Like, the beast didn't scare me, but I've watched tons of kids over the years who have found the beast terrifying, especially in that first scene of him coming down the castle.
Yeah.
It could be very well that he's just afraid of, I was going to say powerful women, because that's what's going to happen to me. He's going to be like, I can't watch any more feminists. I have nightmares about them. Gina Davis is getting me in my sleep.
You showed me Thelma and Louise at 7.
I probably
What happens
too.
To the car?
I probably will.
They die, but they're happy about it.
It's totally going to happen.
Yes.
No, he'll just cry about the patriarchy at night.
Right. So, The Wizard of Oz, it might just be my childhood, but I want to say Aladdin.
Mm.
Because it's like, you should know who Robin Williams is.
Oh my God. And that movie's just great.
It's beautiful. And the there might not be a Disney movie with better music.
I'm trying to think I will say the Beauty and the Beast obviously wins that in my heart. But aside from Beauty and the Beast, it does. It has fantastic songs. Between that and Robin Williams steals the show. Let's be real.
Oh, sure.
My sisters and I still quote that movie.
Yeah, of course. They did a big musical revival on Broadway that apparently people liked. It's great. I don't know what number three is. I almost want it to be like something more adult just because I want to like jumpstart that. Mm. Like, I'm totally willing to be like, this might mess you up, but if I show you this, then I can show you this, this, and like, I almost want to say like Jurassic Park, which is not okay for a 4-year-old. But
no,
like,
but I saw it when I was 7 when it came out.
Yeah,
eight,
but
maybe.
Like, I love it, and it's like, I mean, I was a kid who was like super scared of stuff.
Oh yeah, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Every week,
right?
I was like, I love this show. I cannot sleep.
Right, and I read Goosebumps and stuff, and like, I don't know, I think there's something kind of good about that. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, we complain all the time about the parents who take their kids to R-rated movies and just don't care, but like, I think that things are like scary but won't like give them like Vietnam flashbacks. Now the internet is mad that I made that connection.
Yep, that's a thing.
Is I think that might be good for a kid.
No, I just had a flash of you showing your future kid Annie Hall, like before the first day of preschool.
Right.
And then he's going to wind up like the kid in Burning Annie who has made his whole life mode after Annie Hall.
No, he's just going to kiss some girl and tell the teacher he doesn't have a latency period. So.
God, your future kids are going to be great.
They're going to be so awesome. If anyone would like to give birth to them, please let me know.
And I'll raise them after you ruin them.
Right, right. This is one of your many crazy aunts.
Yeah.
She's here to teach you about colonialism. So that's these are the movies that you should show your toddler, and I included Jurassic Park, but fine. Anyway, and you just, on the way in, you were telling me about how your parents were really strict about R-rated movies.
They were.
Are you glad?
I am indifferent, except for, like, that there was, like, social weirdness about it. And especially because they totally changed the rules by the time, my little sister's 9 years younger than I am, and she had none of those. Like, okay, here's the deal. Like, Alanis Moore says Jagged Little Pill was a huge problem. And I got so much, like...
How was it a huge problem?
Like, because it was just one of those, like, it was written up in the paper about how it was terrible and the young minds were going to melt and blah, blah, blah. And my parents were so...
Because of what? An
it.
F word?
I don't even know. But it was very controversial at the time.
I'm going to listen to that on the way home.
And whoever owned it, it was a big deal. Meg Murphy got it before I did. She was in trouble, too, for having it. I had Sarah McLachlan's Mirror Ball on in the car. And in Building a Mystery, she drops the F-bomb, which I turned the car off right before that happened, not even thinking about it. My mother turns it on. Sarah McLachlan says the F-word. And I got in so much trouble for having a Sarah McLachlan CD.
Yeah.
Flash forward, not even 9 years later, they're buying mature audience-only CDs for my little sister because... When you have a huge age gap in children, you don't give a shit anymore.
Oh, it doesn't have to be. Me and my brother were only 3.5 years, and there was so much that they were like, no, that they just didn't care anymore.
No.
Because I think most parents, like, have the energy and strength to have that round of battles once.
And that's it.
And then the next time it's like, whatever, don't say it around grown-ups. Like,
it really, like, my little sister had no rules. Just none. And she turned out just as well as the rest of us.
I can't say this around Aaron. And if you're a regular listener, you know this. One of his big things is if there's a lot of swearing in a movie, he doesn't want to show it to his kids because he doesn't want them to know those words yet. I don't care about swear words at all.
Oh my!
Look, Aaron, if you think that your 7-year-old doesn't already know the word fuck, she does.
Oh, for real though.
Like she probably knows damn well not to use it around you, but. I don't think it matters. I think that, like, kids come to that at a different stage, but it's between the ages of, like, 6 and 9. Mm-hmm. And then on the playground, they say all the words, and some of them get caught and yelled at by the principal. And it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't, though.
Like, worst case scenario, you have a kid who doesn't know not to use it around grown-ups. But even then, like, the worst thing that happens is, like, the other parents in the playgroup say, "Do you hear what that kid said?" And that doesn't matter to your life.
It doesn't at all. Also, every single morning, this is the conversation I have with my 2-year-old. I say, "Someday mama's going to get her shit together. This morning is not that morning." Every single morning we have that conversation, and I say fuck nuggets a lot.
Right.
Usually when I drop things.
He's going to drop that one at kindergarten one day. He'll
be like, "Fuck nuggets."
And you, and the teacher's going to, "Do you know what he said? What, fuck nuggets?" And you'll be like, "Yeah, that makes sense."
I'll probably high five him. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah.
Did you use it in context?
Okay, let's rate Finding Dory and get out of here. I'm not, I don't have that, that, it was very good, I think everyone should see it. I don't, it's not one of those where it's like, this is going to compete for best movie of the year. I'd give it about an 8 though, which is a very good rating. I just don't think it's quite that high on the list.
Yeah, like I don't need to rush to see it again, but I will inevitably watch it many times over.
And go see it.
Go see it. Bring tissues so you don't have to use your skirt.
Okay. That's good advice.
I've already texted it to like 4 different people.
The main thing, your main problem was wiping popcorn butter on your skirt beforehand.
No, I had it on my fingers, and then I tried to wipe off my eyes, and then my eye makeup and the butter collided with the tears.
Popcorn.
Don't get it.
Is there anything it can't do?
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter
at Sean Collier, PGH,
and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, Kleiber. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.